Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robert, and we have a great show for you today. And as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. And today we're going to talk about Adrian Broner in lockdown here in Cincinnati. He was arrested last week. Triple G in action this weekend. Does he have an opponent? Does his opponent have a chance? We'll break it down for you here.
Yes, he's got an opponent, and no, he doesn't have a chance.
Kell Brook ducking Miguel Cotto, that's the word, and we'll talk about it. Our history lesson this week goes deep, way back to April 19th, 1991, with Big George Foreman getting a shot at the title against Evander the Real Deal Holyfield. But first, we start with Errol Spence, the heir apparent versus Chris Algieri. 2012 U.S. Olympian welterweight Errol "The Truth" Spence Jr. lived up to his nickname, scored an impressive fifth-round KO over former world champion Chris Algieri on Saturday night at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. Spence battered Algieri from the word go. He dropped him in the fourth round and finished him off with two more knockdowns in round five. The time was 48 seconds in the fifth round. Algieri, at no point in this fight, had any kind of an upper hand, had any kind of momentum. He was just mauled by Spence Jr. What were your thoughts on this fight?
Well, the NBC card was a card of the winners did well for themselves. The losers need to find other careers. Chris Algieri was totally outclassed and didn't belong in the ring with The Truth. And The Truth is now ready for Keith Thurman, Sean Porter, Danny Garcia, Cal Brook. And by the way, this fight made him the mandatory challenger for Cal Brook. So Cal Brook is finally going to fight somebody with a pulse. So I believe that will be Earl's next fight. And Earl's already said he's willing to go to the UK to get it done.
Well, and I tell you, Cal Brook is so hot on fighting mandatories like JoJo Dan and who was the other guy he just fought?
Kevin Bisier. Kevin Bisier, yeah.
Now let's see him fight Errol Spence and see how that goes, because he's going to be named the mandatory here soon. I agree with you 100%, and I've been saying this if you listen to the podcast, I've been saying this for a long time now. Errol Spence is the next guy at welterweight. There's no way around it. He is the next guy.
He's ready for anybody that has the guts to step in the ring with him as a first.
I don't see anybody. The worst part is I don't see anybody beating this guy. I don't see Thurman. I don't see Porter. I don't see anybody beating this guy, let alone giving him any kind of opposition. I mean, he's that far and away above everybody in the division right now.
No, I think he dominates the entire class, and I think... By the end of 2017, he'll hold all four belts.
I agree. If the belt holders fight him, they will. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They're going to look for unification, I'm sure. Cal Brook, I think, will probably be his fight. And Errol Spence, after the fight, said he's willing to go to the UK to fight Brook. He doesn't care.
Yeah, no.
This guy's ready to go. This guy has got confidence. This guy is ready. He is the guy now, man.
He basically said he'll fight him anywhere, and that includes the UK. He's not afraid of suffering Charles Martin disease,
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, man, with Errol Spence. I mean, to me, he's almost like the uncrowned champion there, because I think he's better than Thurman, he's better than Brook, he's better than any of them. He really is.
Yep, so, Okay, and one thing I love about you, the one thing I do like about the IBF is they're the one organization that forces their mandatories to actually fight one another. So, Cal Brook is either going to have to fight Errol Spence or give up his title.
Yeah, it's kind of that simple. I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty much where he is. You know, you got Danny Garcia, Keith Thurman, and Kell Brook, and then, of course, Jesse Vargas in the WBO.
Right.
He beats either way. He beats any of those guys.
That's right.
Him and Garcia is a big money fight because they're both undefeated. Keith Thurman, again, another big money fight. Yeah, I think at this point, man.
And he totally disposes of Jesse Vargas.
All of them, yeah. Keith Thurman and both Danny Garcia are right with Heyman, and Heyman promotes Errol Spence.
Yeah.
So that those fights will be easy to, you know, come off.
And, you know, Eddie Hearn always works with Al Heyman. Look, he just gave Charles Martin $5 million.
Right, you know? Right. Kevin Bisier was the number one contender. He's now gone. Errol Spence was number two. Now Errol Spence will move up and become the mandatory.
Absolutely.
So we'll see what Kell Brook chooses to do.
We'll see how Special K really is.
right. Exactly. Where does, you know, Chris Algieri, this is his fourth loss in a row, and I say that, you know, knowing that he lost the Provodnikov fight.
Honestly, Eric, like, I meant what I said. I think the losers in both NBC fights need to find other careers.
You know, and Chris Algieri really rode a great wave after, like I said, he got the decision against Provodnikov. Clearly, you know, it was kind of like the Pacquiao-Bradley first decision to me.
Right.
I didn't think he deserved it, but he got it. You know, he got the, you know, I thought he lost the fight.
And he went to China and got knocked down six times and got paid well for it. So, you know.
Right. And then he goes and he fights Amir Khan, gets beat. You know, and now he's fighting Errol Spence. He gets beat. That's four straight losses for the guy. Clearly, I mean, you know, what's left for him in the sense that, I mean, you know, is he content to be the gatekeeper? I mean, because he doesn't have any, he's not going to be able to compete in this division, clearly.
You know, honestly, I think he needs to go back to either kickboxing or try MMA, because I don't think he's going to be, if he stays at 147, he ain't going to win another fight.
What about if he moved down to 140?
Well, can you see him beating Terrence Crawford?
I can't see him beating Terrence Crawford, Victor Postol. I definitely don't see him beating Trojanovski. And I don't see him beating Bronner. No, I don't see him beating any of those guys either.
Okay, well, it's time to leave. You know, period.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it sucks for him because, like I said, he had a good run. I mean, but I'll be real curious to see what they do with him.
I mean, you're an MMA guy. Can you see him, say, at 145 in MMA doing anything? Because he is athletic enough, and he did do karate before. So do you think he'd do any good in MMA?
No.
No?
No, because, you know, I don't. I mean, like I said, I don't know too much about him. I know he was a kickboxing champion. That's all. You know, but there's a lot more to it. I mean, if somebody takes him down, then he's in water. You know, he's in the deep water already.
Well,
you know, I don't know
about
his jiu-jitsu skills and everything like that and what he can do there.
Okay.
So, yeah, it would be a complete learning curve for him.
Okay.
Put it that way. Yeah, it would be tough road to hoe for him for sure.
No, then I think it's time to find something else to do.
Yeah.
Period.
I don't think that would be a bad idea because I don't know how many more big paydays you're going to get, and I don't know that this was necessarily a big payday, given the fact that Errol Spence is an up-and-comer. You know, he's a bigger name coming up, you know.
I mean, they basically treated Chris Algieri in this fight like a gatekeeper. And does he want to continue doing that? Because all that's going to happen to him is he's going to wind up with more losses. Because remember, he doesn't have the power to knock anybody out. So how's he going to win a fight?
No, he really doesn't. And he didn't look good. I didn't think he looked good. I thought it was more Errol Spence's you know, defense and offense that made him look bad and just more his fighting style. But, yeah, Algieri didn't look comfortable in there, and maybe that was part of Spence's plan too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Algieri didn't look comfortable at all. He never looked like he got settled into a rhythm or anything. He never landed anything of any kind of meaning. He was just completely steamrolled.
Yeah, no. Stick a fork in it. It's done.
And people were saying, I think Lou DiBella said after the fight, you know, he's never seen Algieri steamrolled like that. I'm like, did you watch the Pacquiao fight? He was steamrolled in that fight. You know? Of course, he's been steamrolled like that, you know?
Well, I think Lou's had too many, because one of his favorite things is having lots of scotches. I think he's drank too many scotches, and he doesn't know what he's seeing these days. He's stick a fork in Chris. He's done. Baked potato that's been overcooked, okay?
Yeah, right.
Done.
So, but I'm waiting for Errol Spence, man. I think he's going to be a champion. I think he's going to be a champion for a long time. Like I said, I think you're witnessing the next guy at welterweight. So,
He's going to go to the UK and make them very unhappy.
That's right. Let's talk about the other one, man. Our guy, Krzysztof Glowacki versus Steve Cunningham, man. This was a really, really interesting fight. Krzysztof Glowacki, 26-0, retained his title with a 12-round unanimous decision over two-time cruiserweight world champion Steve Cunningham. Glowacki floored Cunningham twice in round two, but Cunningham, man, he fought back well. He recovered pretty well. He fought back well, but Glowacki put Cunningham on the deck again in round 10 and again in round 12. And it was a tough one for Cunningham. If you're a Cunningham fan, that was it's hard to watch, man, because, like I said, he fought really good. I thought Glowacki, you know, the announcers, you know, if you listen to that fight, you know, we're thinking like, you know, if you listen to them, it was like an even fight. And to me, this fight was never even. Glowacki was landing the stiffer shots throughout.
You had four 10-8 rounds. How the hell could that be even?
Right.
I mean, you know, come
right.
on. I mean,
I had it scored 116-108, just like one of the judges. The scores were 116-108, 115-109, and 115-109.
Yeah.
That's about how I had it. I think they had it close
and remember,
on TV.
And remember, the second round was a 10-7 round because he got knocked down twice.
Right.
I know. That's B.J. Flores for you. I mean, he can't fight, so now he's going to be delusional when it comes to commentating.
No, can't announce either. I mean, he's one of the worst announcers.
I'll never forget in the 11th round of that fight. Well, what am I supposed to do? Give me a break.
Yeah. Well, if you don't know, buddy, there's not much we can tell you. You know. I mean, yeah, exactly.
Steve's a good guy, good story. I mean, we heard all throughout the last few years about his daughter getting a heart transplant. That's a wonderful story. Glad it was a success. His time is done, and he's a smart enough guy. He's been in the Navy. He's got a future. He can go, he can work, maybe the Navy will put him to work or something. I mean, he can do whatever he wants, but his boxing career, just like Chris Algieri, Steve Cunningham, you're done.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is kind of the last leg for Cunningham because, I mean, like I said, he went up to heavyweight, tried it there, didn't fare well, came back down to cruiserweight, again, came up short. And Glowacki is definitely beatable. I mean, he's definitely a beatable fighter. I mean, he looked, he looked good. He was landing the harder shots, but you could see that. I mean, he's definitely a beatable fighter. You know.
Which division does he? I know this wasn't. He beat Marco Hook. So what is that? What division
WBO.
Is that?
WBO cruiserweight. Yeah.
Okay.
Tony Bellew is number three, or as people fans of Creed know him as Pretty Ricky Conlon.
Yeah.
You know, he's number three. I think that would be a good one. I think he's got a very good chance to beat him.
Yeah.
I think he's got a very good chance to beat Glowacki. But yeah.
Yeah. What about Arthur Beterbiev? You could put him in there. I mean, since he's on a Heyman, since he's promoted by Heyman, why not?
Well, Beterbiev is light heavyweight.
That's right. Yeah. I'm sorry.
So he would have to go up 15. That would be at that point I would definitely favor Glowacki in that.
Yeah,
fight.
No, that I forgot about it. Okay. That would be a Bell. I'd see Bellew doing well in that fight.
Yeah, I think so too. I'd like to see that fight. I like Glowacki a lot, man, but yeah. I'd like to see that fight.
That's another one they could have in the UK.
There you go. Oh man, yeah, that's 13 champions, huh?
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, no, if Earl comes in and takes Brooks' title, it would go down to 11.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So there you go. Yeah.
That's insane the amount of champions they have. That's good for them, man. I tell you, they've worked on their boxing and they worked on their programs. And like Kazakhstan and worked on their amateur program and everything like that. And they,
you know, now that we've had access to Sky Sports through the Showtime fights. I wish we could see more of those. I mean, those British announcers, it's fun to listen to those guys because you don't hear any bias from like HBO or Showtime. They strictly talk about the fight. They don't try to matchmake while dream about fights while the fight's going on. They strictly do their business and talk about the fights. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I hope we see more British announcers actually doing fights from over there and leave us Americans alone because there's nobody worthy going over there that knows how to do a fight anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I remember watching, and I don't know if it was Floyd Mayweather and Canelo Alvarez. I was rewatching the fight, and I found it on YouTube, and it was the Box Nation version.
Right.
So it had the British announcers on there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there was no vested interest. There was no, you know, in the Marquez fight I watched as well, him and Marquez.
Yeah.
And there was no vested interest. They announced the fight. They did an excellent job announcing the fight. You know, when you listen to, like, HBO, it's or even Showtime to a large extent, but HBO more so with Kellerman and Lampley. It's like all the house fighter all the time, and you know which one the house fighter is. Depending on who's fighting, you know which one it is.
Yeah.
And they're constantly heaping praise on this guy. What can he do next? What can he do? You know, it's just, seriously, dude? I mean, you know, they sound like pro wrestling announcers. You
and,
know?
You don't hear any of that with any of the British guys.
No.
None.
And, I mean, for the Mayweather fight, they were really praising Mayweather, but they were saying what he was doing correctly and what he was – I mean, it was a different kind of thing. It wasn't like he was the house fighter.
I mean, hell, it would almost be worth it for the U.S. cable and satellite companies to pick up when they want to offer a fight on pay-per-view. Give us the option to watch one of those announcers instead of our own because
like they do during March Madness, you know, how they have like the different teams and they have where they have them, they'll have the teams and it's all like, you know, like the Kentucky announcers or something like that. And they all
exactly.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome, man.
You know, because I honestly think that all of our people that announce fights, need to go over there and actually learn how to do a fight again because, we Americans, we're too damn biased towards our own so-called network fighters.
I don't even know. I mean, you know, because I know Lampley knows how to call a fight, and I know Kellerman knows how to call a fight. I don't know what it is with these two that it's just so biased when they call the fight. Because I've heard them call fights before. This is a learned thing that, you know, I don't know if it's an HBO thing that they have to do or whatever. But if you hear Kellerman talk off air at HBO, or you hear him talk on YouTube and he talks to somebody, gives somebody an interview, he knows his stuff. He's very, you know, very boxing intelligent. He knows his stuff. Obviously, he got to HBO, you know.
Yeah, but I would love to ask Max, why the hell do you, you know, talk like an idiot on HBO, but you don't do it anywhere else?
Yeah, I mean, he sounds like a buffoon sometimes on HBO with just the praise and stuff like that that he gives these fighters and knowing full well that, you know, I've seen him in other interviews. He doesn't feel like that, you know.
You know, because he didn't do that on ESPN.
No.
No. You know, I mean, he needs to think about, since you're going to focus on Kellerman, we'll go that way. But he needs to think about what got him to HBO. And start going back to his ESPN roots and talking about fights. Remember, he's the one that replaced Larry Merchant. And no offense to Max, but I'd rather see Larry still on the broadcast because Larry Merchant didn't put up with any crap. If somebody tried to promote the house fighter, so to speak, Larry would put a stop to it immediately.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, man, I like Kellerman off HBO. When he's on other shows, he's great.
Yeah.
Except the fight game. I don't like him on that either. But when he's on other places.
That's an HBO thing. That's
right.
Why.
You know, when he's on other places, he's great, man.
Yeah.
And I like him better than I like Merchant when he's off HBO.
Yeah. I mean, Larry was on Steve Kim's show about a month ago, and he basically said he enjoys watching the fights, but he cannot handle the way broadcasters are doing them these days. He said, I never did a fight like that.
Wow. Insane. It speaks volumes. Speaks volumes. Let's go on to the next fight, man. This one is a tough one, man. Marcus Brown, and I'm going to butcher this guy's name, and I do apologize. I don't remember it from the broadcast. I remember seeing the fight. I did, but it's Radovoj Kaladzic.
I'm not sure how to say that, but...
we'll call him Kaladzic, and my apologies to him.
Okay.
2012 Olympian Sir Marcus Brown won a very, very disputed decision, 8-round split decision over Kaladzic.
I think Brown lost, Eric.
Yeah, I do too. Brown, I mean, he was credited with that knockdown, and it was clearly a slip. Clearly.
That was no knockdown. No. So, some of the things I saw on Saturday with judges, and we'll talk about that later, but, this was no knockdown, and, I don't know if it's possible, but I hope they put these two back in the ring and we see a rematch.
Yeah, Kaladzic rocked Brown in round 4 and knocked him down in round 6. In the end, the scores were 76-74 for Brown, 76-75 for Brown, and 76-74 for Kaladzic.
Yeah.
I thought Kaladzic won that fight.
Yep.
I mean, and of course, you know, he's the Olympic guy. They're pushing him. You know, he's going to get a big push, but, man, was he exposed that night. He was exposed on Saturday. So.
I hope they... I know this wasn't a title fight, but I hope there's an immediate rematch.
Yeah, I'd like to see it again.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Showtime now. Gary Russell Jr. versus Patrick Hyland. Featherweight champion, WC featherweight champion, Gary Russell annihilated Patrick Hyland in 2 rounds on Saturday night. Russell knocked down Hyland 3 times in round 2 to end it. The time was 1:33. He just ran right through Hyland. This was an easy win for Russell. And after the fight, of course, he called out Lomachenko and said he will follow him wherever he goes until he gets that rematch. And I want to see it, man. His dad, when we interviewed his dad, and his dad told us, he said that, you know, there was, you know, that he wasn't feeling right. There was something going on there. And he was drained. He was definitely drained that fight. I mean, after the second round, he came back and he was dead. You know, there was definitely something going on in camp or whatever, like his father said, that had something to do with a trainer they hired or something like that. I want to see an in-camp Gary Russell with his full good training camp, you know, like he does. I think he beats Lomachenko, man. I really do. I think Gary Russell's got the ability to beat Lomachenko. Whether he does or not, that's up to him. But, you know, he's definitely got the ability for sure.
Here's another fighter. Take note. Here's another fighter that's willing to punch his passport, go to the UK, because Lee Selby, you're next.
And yeah, he called out Lee Selby after the fight as well.
Yeah, and from what I saw a couple weeks ago from Mr. Selby, Mr. Russell will take your title, son.
Yeah, that ends early. I think that fight ends early, too.
Yeah.
Lee Selby, Gary Russell Jr., of course, called out Lee Selby. He said he wants to fight Lee Selby first and then Leo Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh.
But if Selby's not willing to fight, then he'll go straight to Santa Cruz. It doesn't matter.
And remember, they're trying to set up Santa Cruz in Frampton, so... So we'll see what happens. We'll see who Leo has to deal with next.
Russell's definitely in the right division, man. That's a money division right there, boy.
That's right.
A lot of good fights to be made.
Yep.
Now on the undercard there was Jose Pedraza versus Steven Smith. This was a good fight. This was a good back-and-forth fight. The sniper, though, Pedraza, outslugged the number one contender, Steven Smith, to retain his IBF junior lightweight title. Pedraza, you know, to me, controlled most of the fight. He dropped him with a right hook in the 9th round. He kind of dominated early. He kind of faded a little bit, but overall, I thought it was a good fight for Pedraza.
And he improved his defense because Jose Pedraza is not known as a defensive fighter, but in this fight, his defense was outstanding.
Yeah.
Because normally Pedraza likes to get in slugfest, you know.
Yeah.
But not in this case.
Yeah, the final scores of this one, 117-110, 116-111, and 116-111, all for Jose Pedraza. So, not an easy fight for him, but definitely better than the Edner Cherry fight, put it that way. He looked 10 times better than he did against Edner Cherry here in Cincinnati.
And he even said he wants a rematch with Cherry because he wants to beat him convincingly. So we'll see if that happens.
That's silly. I mean... you know, I don't know. That's kind of a silly thing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I totally agree. But hey, this one, you got to report what fighters say.
So. Right. Yeah. I mean, Edner Cherry is ranked number 14. Yeah. I mean, what are you going to prove? You know. I mean, that was your. He was. You know. Hey, look, man. Smith was his mandatory.
Right.
You know, Edner Cherry was his like voluntary. You know.
Right.
I'd like to see Gamboa. Gamboa's in there. He's ranked number 7. Yeah, Klimov. Kilmov is ranked number 4. Andre Kilmov.
Yep.
That would be a good fight. Yeah, he's got some. He's got some good.
And if Lomachenko moves up to 130, that's a remember there's only 4 pounds difference, so you could see some of these 126 guys eventually moving up to 130. So
right.
You know.
And now also, too, going to Puerto Rico, Felix Verdejo fought this weekend. It was not televised. He fought Jose Luis Rodriguez, and Felix Verdejo had a tougher outing than he thought here.
Oh, boy.
He fought a hard 10-round unanimous decision. He won just about every round, but it wasn't like he was giving up the rounds. I mean, Rodriguez was definitely there to fight. They're both Puerto Ricans, so, he was definitely there to fight, so... final scores on that were 99-91 twice and then 98-92. So Verdejo successfully made the 4th defense of his WBO Latino lightweight title. So
and remember, he's scheduled to be on the Madison Square Garden card June 11th.
Right,
so
right.
We'll see who they stick him in against.
Right. And then Jesus Soto Carras versus Yoshihiro Kamagai ended in a draw. I did not watch this fight. I read about it, but they said it was a good slugfest. It was a good fight, but it did end in a draw. And Robbie has some news about Chris Van Heerden.
Yeah, unfortunately. We saw bad judging here. Sorry, Chris. I hate to say this about a guy that gave me 2 hours to talk to him, but
he's so ungrateful.
he frankly lost this fight. He fought a guy by the name of Stephen Camparello. I think he's a Canadian. I'm sorry, I don't have his name in front of me. I'm going to butcher that, but clearly the Calgary, Alberta native won this fight. The scores, however, did not agree with me. Two judges had it 97-93 for Van Heerden, and the third called it a draw, 95-95. And these were three very experienced Las Vegas judges, and they all should have scored it the other way because it was a back-and-forth fight, but the Canadian clearly had more skills. Van Heerden had cuts over both of his eyes. His face looked awful. He was bleeding all over the place. Not good optics, man. And I love Chris, but he did not deserve this win.
Wow. You just trashed him. That's messed up, man.
Well, you go back and take a look at that fight and you tell me if I'm wrong, okay?
I heard that too. Yeah, I heard it was a pretty bad decision. So that's what I'm hearing.
And that was the debut of Jim Ross on CBS Sports
Network.
How did
he do? Yeah, how did he do?
And JR did a wonderful job as he always does. So
all right. Did he use the word slobber knocker?
A few times. No, Jim is a good guy and a good move by CBS Sports. And I'm sure Jim will be talking about it on his podcast, which is also put up on Tuesdays. So I'm sure Jim will have some things to say about what happened in Vegas this weekend.
All right. And that pretty much does it for this weekend's fight. I also told you, I didn't. You know, there was a fight last week we didn't report on, and I meant to. It was Edward Troyanovsky versus TBE Cesar Cuenca.
Yeah.
Same result. Troyanovsky dismantled Cuenca, knocked him out again. And so now TBE now has 2 losses, and Troyanovsky is going to move on to better things here.
Okay,
so,
good.
So very good, man, very good.
Well, hey, it's pretty bad when somebody's supposed to be TBE and we totally forget to report
yeah,
about it.
You're right.
Yeah.
That'd be like forgetting Floyd Mayweather or something like that. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, let's move on to the upcoming fights.
As I say, man, Troyanovsky is a really good fighter, man.
Yeah.
All right. So tomorrow on Tuesday, which this podcast will come out after that, but Ivan Redkak, this is going to be on PBC on Fox Sports 1. Ivan Redkak versus Luis Cruz,
okay.
10 rounds lightweights, and Emmanuel Alim versus Jonathan Cepeda, 8 rounds middleweights.
Okay.
And then on, let's see here, April 22nd, let's see here. There's a fight. There's fights in Italy. You probably don't know who these guys are, so we're going to skip that.
Okay.
But let's get to the big one here. April 23rd, Inglewood, California.
The forum will be packed, brother.
Yeah. Triple G, Gennady Golovkin versus Dominic Wade. 12 rounds for Golovkin's WBA, IBF, and interim WBC middleweight title. So, and also, too, on that undercard, Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez versus McWilliams Arroyo, 12 rounds for Gonzalez's WBC flyweight title.
That's right.
And also, too, Pedro Duran, Little Pete, versus Pedro Lopez, 8 rounds, junior lightweights. That should be a pretty good one, too.
That won't be shown on the card.
No, we'll talk about that, though.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Gennady Golovkin here versus Dominic Wade. I think that, you know, I've seen Dominic Wade fight a few times now.
Mm-hmm.
Caught him on YouTube and kind of went over his fights and kind of broke him down a little bit.
And he is an Al Haymon fighter, so take note of that.
Yeah, yeah. And I just don't see him bringing anything to the table that can give that's going to give Triple G a problem. Like with David Lemieux, I thought, you know, would give Triple G problems just the way he fights, just as big, you know, big punches and everything like that. Like if he can catch Triple G and he can maybe box him a little bit, that clearly didn't happen. I don't see Wade being the type of caliber a fighter as say Willie Monroe even.
Yeah.
So I know he's had quite a few amateur fights. I know he's had a lot of amateur experience and everything like that. But I don't think he was anywhere near the amateur level that Golovkin was.
And remember, Gennady Golovkin knows how to cut off the ring. You proved that in the Willie Monroe fight. So, you know, whatever boxing moves Dominic Wade tries to do, you're not going to get away from the buzzsaw known as Gennady Golovkin. It's not going to happen. My question to you, Eric, does this end quickly, or is Wade capable of lasting a few rounds?
No, unfortunately for me, I think it ends quickly. I think that Golovkin gets him and takes him out of there inside of 6 to 8 rounds.
So, in other words, another devastating performance to keep other middleweights out of the ring.
Yeah, I think so, and it kind of sucks. It kind of sucks that it's Dominic Wade in there, and I don't know. I mean, like I said, I mean he hasn't they haven't fought yet, but just based on his resume and everything like that, I don't see anything that would, you know, if I was his, if I was Tom Loeffler, I wouldn't be shaking right now, put it that way.
Well, okay.
Barry Hunter recently gave an interview, though, I saw, and said that we know Dominic can hit, and he says that he can beat Triple G. He's just going to have to be very disciplined to do that. It's going to have to be like a perfect night for him.
Okay.
It sounds like that's what's going to have to happen. I just don't see any scenario where Dominic Wade wins this, man. I really don't. And it sucks because you want to see a good fight. You want to see Triple G in there getting challenged and stuff, but there's nothing there for him, man.
Well, I go back to my original question. Whenever we've talked about this guy, how do we force a big-name middleweight to have the balls to sign a contract?
I don't know. You know what's funny is that Billy Joe Saunders has been talking and talking and talking and nonstop about Triple G, how he's willing to get in there with Triple G, blah, blah, blah. They offered you $4 million, which is a bigger payday than all his other paydays combined.
Yeah.
To get in there, and he didn't want anything to do with it.
No,
so
keep
talking, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. I mean, that's really the problem with this guy, is that nobody wants to get in there with him. And what do you do with that? What do you do?
I mean, because
I don't know what to do, you know?
Because Eric, I've listened to other shows, and I get sick of boxing fans who don't know how this business works.
Right.
Call up and say, well, how can we support a guy that doesn't fight anybody? Well, how do you force a guy to fight somebody if they offer millions and millions of dollars and nobody's willing to sign?
What can you do? I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, what can you do? I mean, you offered Joe Saunders, I mean, Billy Joe Saunders, $4 million. Where do you go from there? I mean, if he doesn't want to fight, what are you supposed to do? I can't. You can't tie him up and bring him in the ring.
And yet, boxing media and boxing fans are acting like Triple G is ducking all these people. You know.
Yeah, I mean, he's not ducking anybody, you know? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, and Andre Ward has gone up. They say, well, what about Ward? Well, Ward's up to 175 now.
Yeah.
He's not coming back down.
Well, I think Ward did that so he could get away from Triple G, to be honest with you. But
yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, because he's got to fight Sergey Kovalev, and he's no cupcake either. I mean,
no,
I think those are kind of 1A and 1B.
Canelo is probably going to beat Canelo on May 7th. Then he's going to have 15 days to negotiate a fight. Canelo is going to be hated by Mexican fans because he's going to be a big coward and drop the belt and not have the guts to step in the ring. And Canelo is going to get ridiculed for the rest of his boxing career if he does that.
That's what's going to happen. He's not going to fight him.
Yeah.
And everybody waiting for that fight to happen. I think there's more of a chance of him and Cotto hooking up again than him and Golovkin. That fight is not going to happen now. I think that's pretty evident.
You know, there you go. I mean, this guy's going to have 22 consecutive knockouts after he gets done with Dominic Wade, because we're assuming that Dominic Wade is going to go to sleep.
Right.
We don't see this going 12 rounds. But I don't know how big the check has to be to finally get somebody to step in the ring. What does it have to be, $20 million?
He's not getting that. Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean,
that's
the case. I mean, what do you do at that point? You know, I mean, if you're offering people $4 million and they're not getting in the ring, what can you do?
You know, is this guy going to be a ridiculed champion by people because they think he doesn't want to fight anybody? And see, Golovkin has no way of defending himself because he doesn't speak English.
You know, you got Peter Quillen in there. You got Chris Eubank Jr. You got they've got a lot of names. You know, I mean, yeah, it's just like, you know, we want to see him fight somebody, but there's nobody's taking these fights, man.
No, so. That's why I have always been a very good, very loyal supporter of one Gennady Golovkin, because this is not his fault. He fights whoever they put in front of him, and Tom Loeffler, he's not a neophyte in this business. We had him on the show, and he talked about how difficult it was to actually convince people to fight his guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, think about that. He's the one in charge of finding people to fight him, and he calls numerous middleweights on a daily basis, and the answer he hears more often is no. Well, I mean, I don't know how the guy does his job. You know?
I don't either. I mean, it's a tough predicament for Golovkin. And if he, takes care of Wade like everybody kind of expects him to, what's next for him? Nobody knows.
You know,
HBO is trying to make the Canelo fight. I've heard, when you hear Golden Boy talk, that's not a fight they even want. They talk about, we're going to make that down the road.
That's the problem I have. That's another problem I have with Oscar De La Hoya. Not only is his fight not on TV, I'm talking about his Friday night fights, but, hell, when he was a fighter, Oscar fought everybody. I don't ever remember Oscar ducking a fight, and now he's advising Canelo, oh, no, we don't want this fight.
Yeah. Well, that's his job.
Yeah.
I mean, that's his job. I mean, I wouldn't advise my fighter to fight Golovkin either, you know? So, yeah.
Well, it might turn out to be like a $2 million pay-per-view buy. Come on, you'd make good money off of that.
It's got to be right, though. It's got to be right. I mean, you got to see both sides of it. Let's talk about Chocolatito on the undercard against McWilliams Arroyo, Roman Gonzalez. This is going to be a good fight, man. McWilliams Arroyo is a good fighter. I just don't think he gets by Chocolatito. I think Chocolatito is too fast, too good, too powerful. I think
now,
could, but I could see this going to a decision. I could see it going either way.
Okay. Now, we just talked about Golovkin, who we all know about. We've seen all of his fights. Here's another guy that most boxing fans are just learning about, because his fights are now being put on regular TV. I don't know much about the guy he's fighting. I'll take your word for it that
it's
a good
fighter.
Fight.
Roy is a good fighter.
But what happened? You know, does he have to move up? I mean, how does he get a big name that everybody's familiar with?
Well, I mean, look, man. There's the WBO and the WBA. They've got the WBO's got Juan Francisco Estrada, which they fought before. Gonzalez won. They've talked about fighting again. That's a good fight.
Okay.
I've been saying it over and over again. I want to see Gonzalez fight. I'm not ruin wrong.
The one who
beat Zhu Shiming.
Yeah, the one that got rid of our Chinese problem. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I want to see him fight that guy. I really want to see that. That's the fight I want to see, even more so than the Estrada fight. I really want to see him fight Ruin Wrong.
Well, yeah, hey, since HBO put Ruin Wrong on, even though it was HBO 2, I'll go for that.
Absolutely.
At least that's somebody I've seen before, you know. Yeah.
But you go up, and there's really not many people up there. There's Nyoa Inui. And he's a really good. I know he's a good fighter, but again, he's out of his weight class. He's 3 pounds north.
Yeah,
you know. And they talk about him, you know, Chocolatito moving up, you know. But that's a tough deal, man. You know, if you go to bantamweight, that's where Rasheed Warren hangs out. Juan Carlos Payano, who's carrying around that phony belt because he lost it to Rasheed. I thought Rasheed won that fight.
Yep.
Not biased or anything, but I'm just saying. thought he got robbed.
Yeah.
Rasheed to me is a WBA champion, but whatever.
Okay.
But Jamie McDonald's up there. He's a good fighter.
Now, we've all seen him at least twice.
Kameda's up there. We know he's a good fighter.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, there's some definitely good fighters at 118. Again, though, that's 6 pounds north for Chocolatito.
Well,
he's coming up from 108. I mean,
no, it's
guy,
112. It's 112.
No, I know that, but he's coming up from 108.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah, he's all coming up from 108. So, he's a good fighter. I mean, he's a good, but he, 112, that's like a jockey.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's like jockey weight right there. You know,
yeah.
That's for him to put on, you know, 6 pounds to go up, that's, you know,
so
that's a little more than drinking a soda, you know. I mean, he's got to put on good weight to get up there, move his power up there. Lot to do.
Is Roman going to have the same problem that Golovkin is having, although in reverse because he can't gain enough weight to actually make some of these fights?
No, Roman is going to have a different problem in the sense that anybody of like Juan Francisco Estrada, again, is not really a household name. I'm not ruin wrong. It's not really a household name.
Right.
Why would I tune in to watch this guy? Because I don't know much about the division. You know what I mean? That's the problem he's going to have.
So
everybody knows who Golovkin is, but everybody doesn't know the people that Golovkin fights. Here, Roman, they're trying to build a star here, and it's going to be tough because there's not a lot of big names in that division. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And even if he does go up in weight, there's not a whole lot of big names in that division. They want him to move up to 115 to fight anyway.
Yeah.
But now whether that happens or not, I don't know.
Yeah. So is it good marketing strategy by HBO? Because if you notice, the last three times that Golovkin has fought, Chocolatito has been on his undercard. We've talked about it in the past. We thought it was a good idea. Is it a good idea to continue because you're going to see two guys normally fighting people that people aren't going to be happy with?
Well, what everybody wants to see is heavyweight action. They want to see the knockouts and everything like that. And with Golovkin and with
Chocolatito,
you're going to be guaranteed to see that because these two guys go after their opponents. I mean, they're not like
they're
not there to win a decision. It's not your whole, you know, like Ruin Wrong. Ruin Wrong doesn't have a lot of power, but he's got great boxing ability and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You're not really going to watch that fight. You're not really going to watch Ruin Wrong fight somebody, you know. But if he's fighting Chocolatito, I'll tune in for that.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's how they kind of build the division in the sense that they're looking for the next, like, Pacquiao kind of guy. And that's where Roman comes in.
Well, look, what Manny Pacquiao did, because Manny Pacquiao, I believe, started in this weight class, 112 or something like that.
He was somewhere around there, yeah.
I don't think we'll ever see another guy do what Pacquiao accomplished. Go from 112 to 154 and win titles?
Right.
I don't know if we'll ever see that again.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big deal,
you know,
man.
That's why people were criticizing Pacquiao, and they thought he was using steroids, because they were thinking, well, how in the world is he able to go up to all these weight classes and dominate people?
Right.
I mean, especially after the way he dominated Oscar De La Hoya. Remember that? They all, oh, my God, what is this guy doing? You know,
the best I've ever seen Pacquiao look, that fight.
Yeah.
The best I've ever seen Pacquiao look, by far.
So, and I don't think Roman has, I don't even think Roman is as big as Pacquiao was to even, I don't know. See, that's my question about Roman. I don't know how far he can go up or how successful he's going to be able to be because all these other guys have naturally been at their weight classes.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, so that should be an interesting fight. I think Gonzalez gets him, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it go the distance. I still think Gonzalez gets it either way. So that's kind of where we are, that one. Now, the undercard here, there's a fight on the undercard with Pedro Little Pete Duran versus Pedro Lopez. This should be a good fight. Pedro Duran, if you haven't heard of him, he's 13 wins, 10 knockouts. This guy is good, man. This guy is really good. He's a very good up-and-coming prospect. He's promoted by a Mexican promotion, and I hope they show highlights of him at least, because I don't think they'll show.
I don't think they'll show
the fight. But if you get a chance, YouTube it after the event or whatever. And
now it'll be on the it'll probably be on the Top Rank streaming thing that they have.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. The Top Rank streaming. They also have some women on the undercard, it looks like. But, Pedro Duran, man, he's definitely an up-and-comer and definitely one to watch. So,
okay.
Now,
all right.
Also on Saturday from Cebu City in the Philippines, Nonito Donaire versus Zolt Bedak, easy for me to say. 12 rounds for Donaire's WBA junior featherweight title. I think Donaire gets this one. But in all fairness, I don't know very much about Bedak.
Well, with the way Donaire looked in his last fight where they gave him the title, you got to wonder how many more fights has he got left.
Well, they couldn't I can't imagine he's going to have a good stiff competition. He's fighting in Cebu City in the Philippines.
That's right.
His hometown. So,
okay.
Be a pretty easy fight for him.
Okay.
So, let's see what else we got here on the docket. Nothing.
But I think that title that he holds though is one that can be easily taken from what I've seen. So
I agree with that. I would definitely go along with that. Yeah, he's definitely not the fighter he was, for sure.
No. Right.
Yeah, so that's the action for this week.
Okay.
And so let's move along to our history lesson now.
The real deal.
History lesson, Holyfield versus Foreman. March 17th, 1977. George Foreman lost a unanimous decision on that day to Jimmy Young in Puerto Rico. This was called the Fight of the Year by Ring Magazine. Foreman had only suffered his second loss and running his record to 45-2. The other loss he had was to a little-known fighter named Muhammad Ali back in 74. Foreman retired after the Jimmy Young fight. He became a preacher and seemingly had everything he wanted. The loss to Ali, though, had always haunted Foreman. He always felt he needed to prove more in the ring, but he hadn't fought in 10 years. Foreman needed to raise money for a youth center that he was building, and he found a way to raise that money. Fast forward to March 9th, 1987, a man named Steve Zuski. Foreman had decided to make a comeback at the age of 38. Foreman won the fight against Zuski with a fourth-round TKO. Fast forward now to April 19th, 1991. George Foreman was now fighting once again for the heavyweight championship of the world. His opponent wasn't Joe Frazier this time. It was Evander Holyfield.
Yeah.
Think about that for just a second, okay? Think about that. He came back to fight 10 years later, all right, on March 9th, 1987.
Right.
Then in 1991, he was fighting for the heavyweight championship once again. He had fought all that time to get back to... You know, and he had fought stiff competition to get to Holyfield. It wasn't like he was fighting bums. He was the beginning.
If you remember, he fought constantly. Remember, that's how fighters should do it. I mean, George was taking fights, in the beginning when he started coming back, wasn't it? Every month or so. I mean,
he knew he needed to do that, though.
Yeah.
To get back into shape and to stay busy, that's what he needed. Absolutely.
Yeah. But remind people who he beat so he could get this title shot.
He beat Adelson Rodriguez, who I believe fought Mike Tyson. He beat Jerry Cooney. He beat Who else did he beat on that?
And of course, remember Jerry Cooney. People fought Larry Holmes. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. Let me pull this up here.
Yeah.
Let me pull up his second go round here.
Okay. All right.
See who he had.
Yeah.
All right. He fought Alex Stewart. He fought Tommy Morrison.
Yep. Yep. Okay. I remember that.
That was after the Holyfield fight.
Yeah.
He fought Jerry Cooney.
Right.
Bert Cooper, if you remember, he had a tough time with Evander Holyfield.
Yes, he did. Evander Holyfield had a tough time with him.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Bert Cooper was no pushover. Bert
Cooper
was a very tough guy.
Yeah.
Dwight Muhammad Kwawi, he fought. Bobby Crabtree, Steve Zuski, yeah. So he fought some good fighters. I mean, it wasn't like it was all like, you know, just stiffs or whatever, man. He fought some really good fighters.
Yeah.
You know?
But on this particular night, the real deal showed why he was a heavyweight champion.
Yeah, Adelson Rodriguez lost to Evander Holyfield, not Mike Tyson. So there was a correction there.
Okay.
All right. So Holyfield threw the fight, man, controlled the action. But George did have his moments, and he wobbled Holyfield quite a few times in this fight. He caught him with those big right hands and those big jabs, and the one thing I did notice right from the outset is there was a noticeable speed difference, as there always was in Foreman fights, but more so in this fight than any of the previous fights on his comeback.
Right.
Not to mention, Holyfield could really absorb shots
and
come right back. The seventh round of this fight was voted round of the year by Ring Magazine. Holyfield controlled it early, but then was countered by a right hook to the head by Foreman. Holyfield was in big trouble, but then rebounded and landed toward the end of the round with just seconds left, over 20 unanswered punches to Foreman in the closing seconds of the fight. Holyfield then went on to win a unanimous decision by the scores of 116, 111, 117, 110, and 115, 112. This was one of those fights where it was pretty evident that neither fighter was going to knock the other one out. But Foreman did not quit. I mean, he gave it everything he had, and that was it. Decision went to Holyfield. But it wasn't an easy night for Holyfield, that's for sure.
And keep one thing in mind, people, 3 years later, George became the oldest heavyweight champion in history.
Right. Many thought that this would be it for Foreman. He took his shot and lost. But not the case, man. Foreman would go on and win in the division, and 3 years later, it finally happened. He captured the heavyweight championship of the world at the age of 45.
Michael Moore, thank you very much for not following instructions.
That's right. See, they kept selling Michael Moore grills.
There you go.
All right, that's our history lesson for this week.
All right.
All right, let's move on to our news and rumors here. We're going to start, we have double train wrecks of the week, and we're going to start with the train wreck of the week first. AB, About Bars, Adrian Broner, was taken into custody last Tuesday to serve a 10-day sentence for violating his probation in his reckless driving case. Just 24 hours into his jail time, Broner had someone take to his Twitter account and ask people to write him, gave his inmate number and the address of the Justice Center with the hashtag FreeAB. did I mention he was also indicted on his robbery and assault charges as well?
Oh, my.
So, yeah, it's a pretty rough, he's having a pretty rough go of it with the law, you know.
And that's why we call this the Adrian Broner train wreck of the week.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah,
so he was picked up last Tuesday about 9:30 or 10:30 a.m. for reckless driving. And they took him in, and he started serving immediately 10 days. So he should be out maybe the 23rd, I guess, somewhere around there.
Yep.
I don't think he's going to get out for good behavior in 10 days.
No.
But I could be wrong.
Could be wrong.
I don't know how the justice system works.
Yeah.
So that's
train wreck of the week number one.
Right. We'll get to the other one later.
Okay.
Felix Sturm apparently failed his drug test. WBA super middleweight champion Felix Sturm tested positive for the anabolic steroid hydroxystanozole after winning his February 20 rematch against Fedor Chudinov. Sturm said, "I've been tested in my career over 100 times, and always the results were negative." The 37-year-old Sturm told the Cologne Press, or the Cologne Express, "The fact that after 2 months such news comes and he wasn't informed," he said, "how can this be?" He said, "I will bring my lawyers and open the B sample." Apparently, they give two samples. So
yeah, you have an A sample and a B sample.
Yeah. So. yeah, to be continued here. Not good news for Sturm.
And in my opinion, I don't know if it works this way, but I believe that that should either go to a no contest or the guy that he beat should get the victory and keep his title.
Well, it will. It'll go to a no contest if the B sample is also contaminated as well. So we'll see.
Okay. All right. If I was the person that lost in that fight, I would be, after this result, if Stern's allowed to fight, that is, I would be wanting a rematch.
I agree completely. I'm sure he will.
Yeah.
Anthony Joshua, newly crowned IBF heavyweight champion, will be fighting an American next. That's possible. Apparently, there's a lot of interest from HBO and Showtime in Anthony Joshua.
I wonder why.
Right. His rumored next opponent is going to be an American in the top 15. Names being batted around are Bermaine Stavern, Eric Molina, and Dominic Brazil. I think all of them are really good. I think all of them are really good opponents. If I were in charge of marketing over at HBO or Showtime, you know who I'd be going with? I'd be going with Dominic Brazil, the Olympian. And what's better than USA versus America? Both Olympians. There you go.
Are you going to make Brazil punch his passport and go back to the? Because I've always
he's going to have to.
I've always said that Dominic Brazil is a pretender. He's not a contender.
Right.
And I would love to see Anthony Joshua do to him what he did to Charles Martin.
Joshua, his next fight is already scheduled in the O2 Arena, so you will have to go to Britain to fight him. The promoter in me says get Brazil in there, we can promote this fight to the moon. However, the boxing guy in me says I want to see him fight Bermaine Stavern.
Well, I'd be okay with that, too.
I would love to see that fight. I think that's the best fight of the three.
Yeah.
I have a feeling they might take Eric Molina.
Eric did well against Deontay Wilder.
Eric Molina just had a big win last week. So
yeah, he just beat Thomas Adamek,
right?
Which was on DirecTV pay-per-view.
In Poland.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think Stavern would offer him the toughest competition. But I think that the promoter me would say I want Brazil. Because he's going to be the easiest, and he's going to be the easiest to promote.
And remember, two out of those three work with Heyman. You have Brazil and Stavern that both work with Heyman.
Right. So, Heyman, that would be, hopefully they make Stavern, because I think that would be the best fight. Because that's what Joshua needs. Joshua needs somebody like Stavern. You know, he needs that stiff test, so...
The O2 Arena, as they proved in this last fight, remember this last fight when tickets went on sale for Charles Martin and nobody in UK knew who Charles Martin was, but the fight sold out in 90 seconds.
Yeah, that's officially a little bit longer than the actual fight lasted. So
90 seconds. We talk about Golovkin selling out venues.
Yeah.
But Golovkin has never sold out a fight in 90 seconds.
Right. Exactly, man. Exactly.
Jeez.
And as we talked about, Gary Russell willing to go to the UK to fight Lee Selby next.
Right.
He said he wants to fight Selby before Santa Cruz, so hopefully he gets his option there. I would love to see him fight Lee Selby because I think he beats Lee Selby. I think he beats Santa Cruz. I think Lomachenko is the only one in that division that I think gives him a hard time, so we'll see.
And Gary Russell said he'll go to any weight class. He doesn't care.
He wants Lomachenko bad. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think he'll go to his backyard and fight him.
Yeah.
Now, time for train wreck of the week number two.
You guys are not going to believe this. I had to ask Eric. I said, say what?
Yeah, you know? Right. Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. Sr. versus Roberto Hands of Stone Duran. Yep, you heard that right. Chavez and Duran are getting set to fight an exhibition on the undercard of this Terrence Crawford and Victor Postol fight.
Which is supposed to take place on July 23rd.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So they are supposed to fight an exhibition on July 23rd. Oh, my God. And this, even better, is probably going to be on pay-per-view on that card. All right, thank you, Bob Arum, for this great undercard. Is Top Rank that low on talent that they got to go get Chavez and Duran to fight? Seriously, well, you don't have any young Lions you could put on that card?
Look, get out of here. I totally agree with you, Eric, but think about this from a marketing point of view. Duran's movie is getting ready to come out. That's another way that they can promote that.
Yeah, think of it from a marketing point of view. One of the guys has a heart attack in the ring.
That'd be great. I totally agree with you. I don't know what the hell Bob Arum is up to. And I can't wait till the rest of the boxing media gets a hold of this and see if he gets any kind of criticism. Because, I mean, as we're going to talk about here in a bit, Bob Arum is still delusional. He still thinks that Manny Pacquiao is going to fight Floyd Mayweather. I mean, Bob, you're 84 years old. Is it time to give up the reins of Top Rank?
Why not just put Butterbean on the undercard as well? And then we'll just have a complete freak show. You know, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, give me a break.
Come on, guys. Man, seriously, this is like a circus atmosphere. I mean...
I hope that doesn't come off. I hope this is just some kind of erroneous report.
It's not erroneous, man. It's coming off, trust me.
But I have a feeling with Bob Arum, it's going to come off. And look, I don't know why Roberto or Julio would even agree to this.
Well, I tell you what, I saw a training of Julio Sr., and he's hitting the bag, and he looks really good, to be honest with you. I mean, he actually looks really good. He doesn't look 53. I think he's 53 now.
Yeah.
He doesn't look it at all. He looks really good. I saw Roberto Duran sparring Shane Mosley. Also, they had some footage of Roberto Duran training Shane Mosley, and he looks every bit of his age. He wasn't throwing any punches. He wasn't doing anything. He looks every bit of his age. He didn't look that good, man.
Yeah.
So hopefully this doesn't come off.
That's another thing that hasn't been talked about. Roberto Duran is Shane Mosley's new trainer.
Right, right.
Like that's supposed to help Shane at his age?
Yeah, right. I mean, you can bring Roberto Duran in the ring, but he's still ain't going to help you, so I don't know. You know.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I can't believe that.
So, in other news, Miguel Cotto will not be fighting in June. Those plans have been scrapped now because he cannot find a suitable opponent. HBO, of course, did not want any of the fights suggested. Some of the fights were Diego Chavez and James Kirkland. Shocking that they didn't want those fights. It was unrealistic to put a pay-per-view together, so the June Cotto show will not happen. It was also stated that they're going to look to fight in the fall now, but it was also stated that Kell Brook was said to be one of the names mentioned, but Kell Brook had come back and said he was unavailable on the June date. Now, Eddie Hearn came back and said, no, that was just talk. He said that the fact is that, you know, the rumors were false and that Brook would fight Cotto. It would be a dream fight for him. He would fight him anywhere, anytime, for any amount of money. If that's the case,
yeah.
Let's just put two and two together here. If that's the case, and Brooke wanted to fight him anytime, anywhere, they got the call, he talked about it, and he talked to the people and everything like that, and he got the call. Listen, if that's the case, why didn't the fight happen? They would have definitely put that fight on pay-per-view. No questions asked. That's a pay-per-view fight. No questions asked.
Yeah.
You're lying.
Yeah.
You're lying.
Yep.
All right, because, again, that fight is a fight they would have put on pay-per-view.
I bet you negotiations took place, and they couldn't agree on money.
Yep.
So
Eddie Hearn, of course, wanted the fight to take place in Manchester at, you know, one of the O2 arenas or whatever.
Yeah,
and he wanted Brooke to get a 70-30 split, and he wanted a rematch clause. And
I mean,
Eddie Hearn's nonsense.
That's the one thing I worry about with Anthony Joshua, though. Eddie Hearn is his promoter, and we know how stupid Eddie can be at times.
Yep. Yeah, he ruined them fighters, man, because they didn't put him against any competition.
Yeah.
As a promoter, you got to step up in competition. I mean, you have to, or else, you know, because sooner or later, you're going to be forced to fight somebody.
But also, once you win a title, shouldn't you take control of your own career? Why should you depend on your promoters to, here's what we're going to give you?
Well, I think when you get the title, I mean, you need the promoters and managers more than ever because you have to focus on training.
Yeah, you should also have a say-so on who you're going to fight.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially you being the champion and everything like that. You should absolutely have a say-so.
I mean, I don't think, for example, I don't think Kell Brook has complained once about any of the people that Eddie has stuck him in against. I think as a champion, once you hold a title, you want to build a legacy so people remember who you are. Mm-hmm. Like Floyd Mayweather or not, at least he picked out his opponents. We didn't agree with all of them, but at least he had that authority. I think other champions need to take that route and not do what Floyd did, but actually, you know, state, okay, like Gary Russell, for example, he's made it clear he wants to fight either Lee Selby or Leo Santa Cruz. Okay, let's see if Gary Russell can actually have Al Haymon pull those fights off.
Yeah, and I don't see no reason not to. There's no reason. I mean, you know, him and Lee Selby's a doable fight. Him and Lomachenko and Santa Cruz,
yeah,
they're all doable fights. They've all happened, you know, the Santa Cruz or Lomachenko especially, it's happened before. So
yeah,
why not?
So, my point is, with a guy like Cal Brook, we criticize Cal Brook because he hasn't fought anybody. He's fought JoJo Dan, Frankie Gavin, and Kevin Bisier.
Right.
Isn't it time for Cal Brook to say to Eddie, look, I need a real fight? Enough of these cupcakes?
Well, he has, and so far Hearn hasn't delivered. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, if it's up to Brooke wants to fight the best.
Yeah.
I really believe that. It's Eddie Hearn who doesn't want him to fight the best.
Well, then shouldn't you go to Frank Warren or somebody else to promote your fights then?
I would think so, because he's leaving a lot of money on the table, put it that way.
You know. I mean, look, do I want to see Miguel Cotto get another title shot with Cal Brook? No. But if that fight was legitimately offered to me and I was a champion and I just fought my mandatory, I'd sign that contract in 2 seconds.
Sure. Why wouldn't you?
You know.
But, I mean, and like I said, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. He's talking about, you know, well, the fight, you know, we didn't get offered, or it was, you know, we wouldn't have never turned that down. Well, it doesn't make any sense. Why would they scrap that June date and not put a pay-per-view together when your name was mentioned?
And now I wonder what they're, because remember, they reserved the Barclays Center for that whole day.
Yeah, not
bad. I wonder what happens to Brooklyn now, you know.
Right?
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Interesting.
All right, but June 11th, it is now official. Vasyl Lomachenko will face Roman Rocky Martinez for the WBO junior lightweight belt. I cannot wait for this fight. This is going to be a very good fight. Also, Felix Verdejo will be on that undercard as well.
Yeah, but we don't know who he's going to fight yet.
Right, but that's going to be a dynamite fight with Lomachenko and Rocky Martinez. That should be very good.
You know, so far in the first part of this year, Eric, Showtime has had the better boxing schedule than HBO.
Oh, absolutely. Without question.
Yeah.
Without question. Showtime is murdering HBO.
Yeah.
Right now with the fights and everything like that. I mean, HBO has got good fights. You know, they've got good fighters on there. They've got, to me, HBO's got actually the better fighters, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But, you know, honestly, I mean, with the schedule and everything, Showtime is killing them.
And Showtime is in negotiations with the people in Russia to try to carry the Wilder fight.
They'll definitely carry the Wilder fight, for sure.
Well, so far they keep saying no deal has been worked out, but they every time they promote their calendar, we want to bring you this fight. We're doing everything we can, so, you know.
Wow, could you imagine if it's not televised?
Yeah.
Wow.
I could see that happening, though, with a place like Russia, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Craziness.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about Robert's favorite here, Bob Arum. Bob Arum recently told TMZ Sports that a rematch with Floyd Mayweather for Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather is more likely than not. But there are still some serious obstacles to overcome. Namely, both fighters are retired. Namely, nobody wants to see the fight again. Namely, nobody wants to pay $100 for the pay-per-view again. Namely, you fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah.
They said they spoke with Bob Arum, who said it's close to 50-50, but probably leaning more toward the fight happening. Arum said he hasn't. This is beautiful. It's a 50-50 fight. It's probably going to happen. Arum said he hasn't spoken with Manny or Floyd specifically about the rematch. But said if the match was available, I believe Manny would come back for the match.
Look, let's make that train wreck of the week number 3.
Right. Aaron also says that Showtime has some serious interest in Mayweather-Pacquiao, too. I guarantee they probably don't. They probably do, only if it's going to be on Showtime. And you know, he said that's an important component to making the fight happen again. So what are the obstacles, aside from what I just mentioned? For starters, both guys, of course, are retired. Manny's focusing on a Senate run in the Philippines, and Floyd's focused on promoting his fighters. Arum said, if either man agrees to the fight, my feeling is that they won't be able to resist. You are a moron, son. This is coming from the same guy that's putting on Chavez Duran right now. All right? Come on.
All right, let's get one thing straight here. Bob Arum is 84 years old. Like I just said a few minutes ago, is it time to turn over the reins of Top Rank to somebody else?
Bob Arum, there's a big difference between wisdom at 83 and Alzheimer's at 83, okay? And I think he's suffering from the latter.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I mean, Manny Pacquiao is about to become a Filipino senator. And the next step beyond that, as Manny said, I'm going to be president of my country.
That's like asking Barack Obama to train for a fight. I mean, think about that for a minute. I mean, that's seriously like, you know, how much time he's got to put in. I mean, over the senators. That's all it is. It's just you're working for the country.
Look, as Pacquiao has explained, being in Congress, that was easy. But he said the job becomes more difficult when you become a senator. I don't live in the Philippines. I don't understand how it works, but apparently the Senate has more priority than the Filipino Congress. And he said once you win that job, it's a 24-hour-a-day thing.
Right.
You can't do anything else.
Right. I mean, yeah, exactly.
I don't understand people like Bob Arum or Freddie Rhodes. Oh, Manny's got two more fights left. Manny has said repeatedly he's not fighting anymore. Why can't you guys get that?
Yeah, nobody believes him. Nobody believes him. I don't know, man.
And I guess it's because boxers, for so many decades, have said, I'm retired, and then they end up coming back.
Well, I got to be honest, man. If he runs for Senate and wins, and he takes a fight, he's going to be hated in the Philippines.
He will be.
Because I would be furious.
Yeah.
If a senator, you know, I elected a senator, and he just said, screw it, screw the job, I'm going to go train for this fight.
Yeah.
I'd be furious.
Yeah.
You know.
No. No, I mean, Manny Pacquiao made it very clear. He wants to be one day, probably very soon, because I'm not sure how the political system works there, but he wants to be president of his country. And one of the stepping stones is becoming, look, he's held 8 world titles, or 10 world titles in 8 different weight classes. Now he's going to hold the world title of being president of his country. Now, have you ever heard of a fighter that has been able to give up that opportunity to continue fighting? The answer is no. So Bob Arum, Freddie Roach, any other people drinking the Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, Kool-Aid, you need to give it up. Both of these people are never fighting again.
Did I mention that nobody wants to see that fight again either?
Yeah.
I mean, did you watch the first one? Did you watch one?
Yes, I did. I was one of the 4.4 million.
You know
okay?
What I mean? I mean, everybody that watched the first one, do you really want to see that repeated?
Hell no.
I don't care if Manny was healthy. He just doesn't have the style to beat Mayweather. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
Maybe back in the day, he could have gave him a run. Right now, no. And especially that he's becoming more flat-footed. You don't see that same movement. Again, and everybody who was clamoring that Manny Pacquiao is back, he's the old Manny Pacquiao, go look at the De La Hoya tape. Go look at his last fight. You tell me if that's the same fighter.
This fight should have, if the Floyd Mayweather fight was going to happen, it should have happened in 2009 or 2010. Then we would have gotten the fight of the century because we would have gotten two young, hungry lions actually giving us a fight. What we got last May was a ripoff. Let's be honest, folks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolute ripoff. So, unbelievable.
No. Wake up and smell the coffee. Floyd Mayweather's retired. Manny Pacquiao's retired. And Manny will never come back. Floyd, you never know. But I firmly believe that Manny Pacquiao will never put on a pair of boxing gloves ever again.
If he does, he'll be committing political suicide in the Philippines. No,
that's
no
right.
Question about that.
That's right.
You know, because I can't imagine everybody will say, oh, yeah, go ahead and do it. Yeah, just go ahead and screw the country and let's go ahead and get out of here.
Could you imagine if he got elected president and then was offered a fight? I mean,
yeah, right?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I mean, Barack Obama's sport is basketball. Okay, like Steph Curry is hurt for the Warriors. He may not play tonight in the second game of the playoffs against you. Could you imagine Barack Obama replacing Steph Curry? Give me a break.
Right, and just having him trained and full-time.
Yeah.
Everything. You're supposed to be running the country. What are you doing on the court, man?
Yeah, you know exactly.
I mean?
So, no, you can't. You know, sports and politics are not supposed to mix.
Politicians are scrutinized more than anybody else in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, they are under a microscope 24/7.
I mean,
they
look
are like
at
celebrities in the sense that they are under that microscope 24/7.
Look at the people running for U.S. presidents now. I mean, everybody's followed all over the place. You know what they're doing all the time.
Yeah, look at, what is it, Trump's aide, the guy that supposedly grabbed that girl or pushed her or something like that?
Yeah.
He's under the microscope. I mean, everything they do is under a microscope.
Right.
Yeah, everything Hillary does, everything Bernie Sanders does, Trump,
yeah,
Cruz, all of them, they're all under microscopes, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, you want to see if you can box it and get it now. There ain't no way, man. It's no way.
No. So Manny Pacquiao, in my opinion, will never put on another set of boxing gloves. And Freddie Roach and Bob Arum, you need to face reality, people. You need to build a new top-ranked star and quit putting on exhibitions like Roberto Duran and Julio Cesar Chavez.
Well, they are. They're building Chavez and Duran. That's going to be their next cash cow again. They're going to bring Julio back and have a series of fights with him. And, yeah, absolutely, you know.
Well, you know, it would be embarrassing if Julio actually did come back and look better than his son.
Well, not for him, it wouldn't, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, it's like...
Yeah, I mean, they don't know how to. That's the thing with, you know, that's the thing. Like when you talk about, like, say, pro wrestling,
yeah,
and you talk about, like, you know, when a guy runs his course, like Hulk Hogan or somebody
runs
his course,
yeah,
or you know, and there's nothing there anymore. You know, he's not the same guy. Everybody's kind of grown past his gimmick and everything like that. Then they create a new star, like the Ultimate Warrior, or
right,
Hart, or you
right,
know, whoever.
Exactly.
You know, or the guy reinvents himself. That's what boxing is really missing as far as promotional aspects. It's not really up to the fighters to do that.
Right.
But, like, the UFC is the same way, where, you know, like, they can't depend on anybody because their top guy gets beat, like, nightly.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, there's so many ways to lose a fight there that, you know, you can ride John Jones, you know, but, hey, I mean, he's fighting soon, I think next week or whatever. He can get beat by OSP or whatever. He can get beat by any of these guys.
But John Jones can't stay out of legal trouble, you know.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I mean,
yeah.
Robbie Lawler's a good champion, but he can be beat. There's so many different ways to lose, so you really can't, like, saddle a horse and ride with it. And that's how boxing has to be, too, where you're showing people. You can't be showing the same people over and over and over.
No.
You know, you have to try to create new stars and everything like that and create some interest in these fights. Chavez and Duran had their day. I don't need to see them on a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I need to see some young lions on a pay-per-view, somebody I can get excited about.
Look, as I've stated many, many times, and I'll state it again, the fight with Terrence Crawford and Victor Postol, it's a mandatory, it's a unification fight. It needs to happen. But what the hell are you doing putting these two guys, who nobody knows anything about, on pay-per-view?
Right.
You have to build them up and allow them to earn the cachet of being a pay-per-view star.
Well, that's why they're putting Chavez and Duran on there, you know, because everybody knows those two.
Yeah.
You know, years ago, everybody knows those two. That's why they have to put those guys on the pay-per-view to carry that card, because Top Rank has got zero talent over there.
Yeah, well...
You know, they've got to start bringing up their talent, man. They've got guys.
All you're doing is getting senior citizen people to invest their Social Security checks to watch two old guys that they remember.
Yeah, put some fighters on there, man.
You're not... when you put together a pay-per-view, it's supposed to be a money-worthy fight where, you know, you can look forward to it. This is a disaster.
This is like that movie with Sylvester Stallone and Robert De Niro where those two old champions fought each other or something.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Whatever that movie was.
That was done a couple of years ago. Yeah, I forget the name of it, but I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it's like, you know, watching these two, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to see this. It's sad.
Yeah.
You know? I don't want to see it.
No.
You know?
I mean, I want to see Terrence Crawford fight Victor Postol, but I don't
pay for it, put it that way. That's the other thing, is having this fight on pay-per-view, him and Crawford and Postol. Nobody knows, again, man, if you want to, this is the wrong way to build Terrence Crawford. The fight for Terrence Crawford was Manny Pacquiao. That was the fight. because at that point, you pass the torch. If he beats Pacquiao, you pass the torch. If Pacquiao wins, you still pass the torch because he's on pay-per-view. And maybe he put up a good fight, you know.
Right.
That's what you kind of bank on, is that him putting up a good fight. So Terrence Crawford, you know, then becomes the man. Then he becomes the pay-per-view attraction.
That's right.
The guy that beat Pacquiao, you know, because everybody, that's how Terry North started, when he beat Sugar Ray.
Yeah, you know? That's right.
That's when he became the household name, because then everybody wanted to see, hey, this is the guy that beat Sugar Ray. Let's see him, you know, and he did a number on Sugar Ray. Let's watch him.
Right.
You know, but they're not doing that. I don't know what they're doing over there.
No.
Aram needs to go.
Hey, he's 84. It's time to, I know he's got somebody else working with him. It's time to turn over the reins to somebody else.
Yeah. Go hang out with Chris Algieri and Steve Cunningham.
yeah, your day is done, son.
It's all over. It's all over but the crying, son. Well, that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Robert on Twitter at Ringside Robert, or you can call Ringside Robbie's Corner at 773-572-7781 and listen to all the podcasts and history lessons. I'm at Ringside 73, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.